All right, we're going to start here, 11 dines down on the top of Lamed Chet Amud Aleph. Just to note, yesterday when we left off, with regards to the Shevuim, people are taken in captivity by the non-Jews, what exactly is their ownership in these individuals or in the property that they take? We concluded yesterday that they're able to take possession of these items through Chazakah. Through, Rashi says Chazakah here is treating them like an Eved. Tosfot, on the other hand, says that it's from Kibush, or the Tosfot 3 talks about Gezel, the idea that if they take possession of it, if they conquer or they demonstrate control over these individuals or this property, that it belongs to them. And that's what the Tosfot 3 concludes over here. Mikan mochiach, shenichse Yisrael she'ansum kenanim. If there is Jewish property that was taken away by these non-Jews, bitni she'ashua ba'alim, and the Baalim give up hope of getting it back. Bikanam Yisrael Acher. And then another Jew buys them from these individuals. Arahem Shalom. They fully belong to the second party, because you have Yehush Baalim, and you have the Chazakah that is established by the non-Jews over this property. And the first party, the first owner, can't get them from this individual, purchase them from the Goyim. Afilu bidamim. Even if he wants to make payment for them, he cannot demand them back. Akach lo pligi Reb Shimon Gamliel el avadim. And Reb Shimon Gamliel only argues with regards to slaves. Kid Chizkia, Abba B'shai Nechassim Modeh. Because over there by Chizkia, there's a reason that the Evan might throw himself over to the other side or throw himself into captivity. That's why we maintain, because of Tikkun Olam, the fact that the original owner gets him back. But that's unique to avadim. Property doesn't walk. Property doesn't leave. And therefore, it's not subject to that din of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And if the person has Yeush on their property, once it is taken by these marauders or by these conquerors, then if someone else buys the property from them, it belongs to them fully. Second thing we discussed is the Ovid Kochavim's ability to take possession in an Eved Kenani. And we said that an Ovid Kochavim can only have a Kinyan Masei Yadayim inside of a Eved Kenani or inside of another non-Jew. And therefore, whatever he controls, he can only transmit that or transfer that to another party. So if you buy the individual out of captivity, or you buy an Eved Kenani from an Oved Kochavim, then you can only purchase from them what they own in that individual. And that, again, the Tosfot Reed spells that out, that if someone sells an Eved to an Oved Kochavim, that Oved Kochavim sells it to another Jew, then the original Jew holds the Kinyan Aguf still. But since he couldn't sell it to the Ovid Kochavim, and the Ovid Kochavim doesn't have anything to sell to the other Jew, it's actually the first Jew that holds control over that. And therefore, in order for that Ovid Kenani to go free, he would need to get Shechrur from the original Jew, not from the second Jew that owns him. Just know that the Rambam in Perek Tet mentions that if you buy an Ovid Kochavim, Ovid Kenani from an Ovid Kochavim, even though you're only buying him for the Masei Yadayim, the Kesef Mishnah suggests over there that the Rambam believes once you're Tovel him, L'shem Abdut of Eved Kenani, that you gain a Kinyan Aguf in him. So that you can generate that Kinyan Aguf, even though you only purchased the Masei Yadayim from the Oved Kochavim. But again, if the original owner was a Jew, and he was already Nidbaum, L'shem Abdut, then maybe, like the Tosfot Reed says, it would remain with the original owner. And that means that you'd have different pieces of ownership belonging to different parties here. And that the Shechrur would always depend on the first person that owned him, meaning the Jew, the first Jew that owned him, because unless he sells those rights straightforwardly to another Jew, then those rights will remain with him. So now, Amar Rav Shimon bar Abba Rabbi Yochanan, Eved shebarach mi beit asurim yatzad ha-cheirut. An Eved that runs away, not from imprisonment or incarceration here, but literally from captivity. He was held in captivity, and he escapes from being held in captivity. Vlod, not only does he gain his freedom, but we also force his master to write a get shechrur to free him completely. It's not Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, ben kach u ben kach yishtabed. Yet, we know that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah says that either way, we want the Eved to go back into Shibud, because we don't want the Eved throwing himself to the Gaiso to try to free himself from his predicament. V'amar Rabba Barchana Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel b'mishnatenu. Anytime Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is mentioned in the Mishnah, halacha kemoto. The halacha is like him, chutz mi'arev v'tzidan v'raya achrona. The exception of these three cases, the halacha is always like him, which would mean that in our Mishnah, where Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is mentioned, that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. And that's in contradiction to this halacha that Rabbi Yochanan just stated, that Erev Shebarach Mevita Surim Yetzah L'Cheirut. So here it seems like he gains his freedom, whereas if you pass on like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he says you always go back into Shibud. So Bishlam Ola Abaye, for Abaye that makes sense, Mukila L'Hai Lifnei Yeush, V'Hai L'Achar Yeush. For Abaye he can distinguish between the cases and say that the case of our mission is a case where it was prior to the first Balin giving up hope of getting back the Evet. And that's why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes that he remains under Shibud, whether it's from the first or the second Rav, he's going to remain under Shibud. Because, Shem Shemitzvah Liftot Ebnei Churim, Kav Mitzvah Liftot Ed Abadim, and therefore there's no disincentive from redeeming him. And that way we say that he should remain under the auspices or the Abdut of the original owner, and people will redeem him. So we don't have to worry about it. And the case here that Rabbi Yochanan speaks about where the Eved is Barach Metasurim, that's La'achar Yeush. After the first owner already gave up hope of getting him back, in that instance, even Rabbi Shimon Gamliel will agree that he goes free. Elo the Rava damar la'achar Yeush, but for Rava who explained our mission as a case of after Yeush, Kasha the Rabbi Yochanan, the Rabbi Yochanan. Now you have a stira within the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan that you can't reconcile. Rabbi Yochanan says the loch is like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in our Mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan over here says that an Eved that runs away is given his freedom. So I'm going to call Rava, time am I. What is the reason Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that Ben Kach, he goes into Shibud? Mishum Techizkiya. Because of Chizkiya who said that we're afraid that the Eved's going to run away, throw himself into captivity to gain his freedom. Boreach Shaini. Someone who runs away from being in captivity is different. Over there, he risked his life to run away, because if they catch him running away out of captivity, they're going to put him to death. Abuli Apil Nafshe, the guy sold. He's going to throw himself back into captivity. So now, you can read that one of two ways. You can either read this that he was in captivity, escaped, and now he's really subject to a death sentence by these captors. So you think he's going to throw himself back here? If they catch him, they're going to put him to death. So he has no incentive to go back there, if you're talking about the same captors. Or on the other hand, if we see that he's risking his life to run away, then he's not going to take the risk of going back into captivity just to try to run away again. I mean, that's too risky an endeavor to do the same thing twice, especially when he ran away the first time. So it shows or demonstrates that this Eved is not interested in being in captivity, and therefore you don't have to worry about him running back to captivity or doing that to escape his Avdut. And that's why, in this case, he gains his freedom because he risked his life to get out. Amte de Mar Shmuel Ishtabai. The maidservant of Shmuel was taken into captivity. Now, it's interesting that this must have been going on in Ardor. It must have been a common problem in Ardor because Shmuel's daughters are also in the Gemara taken into captivity. So here, if Shmuel's daughters were taken into captivity, his maidservant was taken into captivity. It seems like it was a regular occurrence in Ardor. And seemingly, it was done in order to gain ransom, meaning that it was a business, that people would take these individuals into captivity and then ransom them to make money, right? The equivalent of these pirates that do this as their means of making a living. Pirkua l'shum amhata. The community redeemed her, but redeemed her to be an amhata, to remain a maidservant. V'shadru alei, and then they sent her back to Shmuel. Shachulei, and this is the message that they sent to him. Anan k'Rabbi Shimon Gamliel svirlan. We paskin like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So therefore, she remains under Shibud, because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, doesn't matter why you redeem her, or what there was intent in her redemption, she remains tachat the Shibud. Ben kach, b'shibud. At I nami k'rabonan svirlach. Even if you hold like the Rabbonan, anan l'shum amhata parkinim la niala. Even if you hold like the Rabbonan, we redeemed her to remain a shivcha. And therefore, according to the Rabbanan, if you redeem her to be a shivcha, she remains a shivcha. Beinu savor lifnei Yeush avam. They didn't understand, or they thought, that this was prior to Shmuel having Yeush. And that's why all of this was applicable. Velohi lachar Yeush avam. It all happened after Yeush. Ushmuel lo mibayid ishtibudei lo mishtabed ba. And Shmuel believed that not only did he not have a right to be mishtabed to put her into slavery again, to make her into a shivcha kananit again. Elagita de cheruta namilo atzra. He didn't even require her to get a get shichrur, to get a document of emancipation from him. Because Shmuel etamei, Shmuel zeshitato, tamar Shmuel hamafkir abdo yatzal cherut. Someone who makes his eved hefker, his goes free, ve'eino tzarich get shichrur, and does not require a document of emancipation, shenemar. V'chol eved ish miknat kesef. So any eved here of a person, miknat kesef, that was acquired through monies, eved ish, v'lo eved isha. Why is it saying eved ish? What is particular about a man owning the eved? If an eved is property, then it can be owned by a woman, it can be owned by a man, it can owned by a katan. What's the issue here of eved ish? Ela eved sheyosh lo reshut l'rabo alav karui eved. An eved where the master holds control over the eved, that's called an eved. Shein lo reshut l'rabo alav in karui eved. If the master doesn't have control over the eved, he's not the master of the eved. So when you're mafkir the eved, when you release all ownership from the eved, you no longer have control over the eved, and that's why they're no longer an eved kenani. Now it's clear here that a mafkir of dough, according to Shmuel, is when he articulates that he is being mafkir the eved. It's not simply says a mochel, he acts like he's mafkir. He has to literally be mafkir the eved. Number two is that we have a hekesh between get isha and the get of an eved. I mean that a document of divorce and a document of emancipation, there is a hekesh between them, which we'll see in the Gemara in Kiddushin, which would indicate that whenever a woman needs a get, so too an eved needs a get. And that is the opinion that is contrary to Shmuel, that when you're mafkir a woman, that doesn't free her from her marriage. She still needs a get piturin. And the same thing should be true by an eved kenani. Just because you're mafkir the eved kenani doesn't mean that he doesn't need a get shichrur. That's the opinion in opposition to Shmuel. Shmuel, on the other hand, believes that it's not always that a get eved and a get isha are equivalent. There are dinim that are learned one from the other, but they not will not always have the same din. And therefore here, because you have the gzerat ha-katuv by the eved, that the eved can go free just simply through hefker, even without a document of emancipation. The other thing to note here is that Shmuel clearly holds like Abaye. You can see that in the Balei HaTosafot. He discusses why, but it's clear here that he thought there was a difference in the halacha between Lifnei Yeush and Lachar Yeush. That is only true according to Abaye's opinion, that our Mishnah is a case of Lifnei Yeush and Lachar Yeush. Everybody would agree that you go free. That's the shita of Abaye, so it's clear that Shmuel is holding like that. Because for Rava, even Achar Yeush, there still is a din of Shibud, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Amtei the Rabbi Abba Bar Zutra, Ishtabai, the maidservant of Rabbi Abba Bar Zutra was taken into captivity, Parka, Hau Tarmuda, the Shom Itita. This Tarmuda, this non-Jewish individual, redeemed her for her to be his wife. Shalchule Lididei, he sent to him, the owner, the original owner, who is Rabbi Abba Bar Zutra. Iyut avat, if she was a good slave, then shadar la gita de cheruta, send her a document of emancipation. So hechidami, what is the point or purpose of sending her a document of emancipation? Idematsu parkila, lama la gita de cheruta. If they have the ability to redeem her from this individual who purchased her, then why do you need a document of emancipation? Simply redeem her, and she'll come back to her former status. Idolo matsu parkila, if they don't have the ability to redeem her, kishadu la gita de cheruta, mayhavi. Just because you send her a document of emancipation, what's that going to do? The owner now has no interest in selling her, and doesn't really care that you just freed her, because he owns her now. So what would that do to help? Mar says, olam de matsu parkila, they do have the ability to redeem her. We came into mishadu la gita de cheruta, Chabure mechabre adodi uparkila. If you send her a document of emancipation, that will be an incentive or encouragement for the community to raise the funds to ransom her. Because again, of that mentality that we saw in yesterday's daf, that people are more willing to redeem or ransom a free person rather than a slave. Now whether that's because there is a difference between them, or there's a perceived difference between them. We saw that yesterday. You can read that either way in the sheet of the Chachamim. But clearly the mentality of individuals was that they would not redeem slaves as readily. Once they were a free person, then the community would make the best efforts to redeem the individual. That was a case where they could not redeem her. Came into Meshadala Gita de Cheruta Mitzala Ba'ape. That if he sends her a document of emancipation, it actually lessens her worth or value in the eyes of the current owner, Omafarikla, and he will allow then for her to be redeemed. What it seems from this is that when he bought her originally, he bought her from the captors that had taken her in possession. So he thinks he's buying a non-Jewish slave from non-Jews, And now he has this new wife that he bought from these captors. But now all of a sudden, they send over this document of emancipation, which does absolutely nothing, but does identify her as a Jewish-owned slave. And that was something that was not particularly pleasing, something that wasn't necessarily looked upon favorably. That here, all of a sudden, he got a Jewish-owned slave as his wife, and therefore he'd be more willing to have her be redeemed now because he's less likely to keep the woman because of the fact that she was once owned by Jews. So Gemara says, is that really true? Is Jewish ownership always a negative for items? Don't we have a Gemara in Avodah Zarah that says, Chaviv lehem b'mtam shiyisro yoter min shiyutehem? There the Gemara speaks about the problem of leaving animals in the pundak alone with the non-Jewish owners. So over there it says that the animals of the Jews are more beloved than their own wives. Obviously it speaks in a particular time about a particular type of individual. But it does state that Jewish ownership is not necessarily a disincentive. So then why do you believe that Jewish ownership over here would cause him to want to release her more readily? So when it says, Hanimili Bitsina, that's in private. Avobafasya Zilubuhu Milta. At least in the public face, and when facing the public, that's considered to be something that is less desirable, to have Jewish property or to have a slave that was once owned by a Jew. That's considered to be beneath their dignity or something that they would not necessarily engage in. In private, they might do whatever they want to do. I mean, whatever pleases them, they do in private. But in public, at least facing the public, then they don't want to own a Jewish-owned slave, and therefore they're more likely to release them or to free them for ransom. There was this maidservant in Pumpadita that was a little more promiscuous, freewheeling. And basically she was becoming engaged with individuals, causing them to violate Isurim in having relations with her. If it wasn't for the fact that we have this memra from Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, that anybody who frees a slave violates an aseh d'oraita, havam kaifina le lamora, I would force her master, here it's a woman, v'kativ la gita decheruta, and have her release this maidservant. This maidservant's causing problems because she is a maidservant. So what I would do is I would force the master or the mistress here to release the Shifcha Kenanit. And then assuming that once he released her, they'd get her a proper husband that would watch over and take care of her. And then that would prevent this problem from continuing. But he says, I have a problem because it's a violation of an aseh d'oraita to free the slave. Ravina Amar, Kiha Moda Rav Yehuda Mishum Milta De Yisura. So Ravina says that Rav Yehuda in this case would agree that you're not in violation of the Aseh. Because here there's a benefit to the release of the individual. It's only when you simply release the individual that it's considered to be problematic. But if you release them because there's a purpose to that release, then that's not considered to be a violation of the Aseh to release an Eved Kenani or a Shifcha Kenanit. Meaning that the larger picture trumps the particular release of this Eved. And over here, this Shifcha Kenanit is causing huge problems by being or remaining a Shifcha Kenanit. If we release her, at least we can try to deal with the problem, and therefore it may be worthwhile to do that. Is that really true that Abaye believes just because there's an Isur to release, there's a mitzvah aseh midoraita, which makes it into an Isur aseh to release the Eved Kenani, the Shifcha Kenanit, he wouldn't do it? There was an instance where a Shifcha Kenanit was, let's say, owned by two partners. One partner released her, the other partner did not release her. So she's half a Shifcha Kenanit, half a Bat Chorin. And therefore they compelled the mistress to release her in order to make her a free woman. That the reason that they released her in that instance is because she once again was promiscuous, freewheeling, and because of that, they wanted to release her. So Gemara says, Halchiashto, how can you compare the cases? Haltam, in the case where she's chetzia shifcha knanit, chetzia bat chorin, there, lo evid chazia, velo le ben chorin chazia. She can't marry an evid. The master of an evid entitled to give him a shifcha knanit as a wife. That's if she's a full-fledged shifcha knanit. Then the master can marry her off to an evid. On the other hand, if she's a full free woman, she can marry a regular Yisrael. In the instance where she's half a shivcha and half a bat chorin, then she can't marry either. She can't marry the eved because of the bat chorin side of her, and she can't marry a free person because of the shivcha side of her. And therefore she was stuck in a predicament. That predicament was causing the problem. Because she couldn't marry, and she couldn't be together with any man, therefore she acted with minhag hefker. Now, if it was just for period rivia, as Rashi says over here, la mishum de itata mifkada period rivia, that it was not because of simply her being half shivcha knanit and half bat chorin that we force the release. Because by an eved, we would force the release because an eved is nitztaver, or a man is nitztaver in period rivia. So when it comes to an Eved Kenani, who's a half Eved Kenani, half Ben Chorin, we compel the owner to release him in order that he can mekayim the mitzvah of Piri Arivya, or the mitzvah of Leshevet Yitzara, which is a mitzvah gadol. And therefore we release the Eved, or we force the owner to release the Eved. That is not true by the woman, because the woman doesn't have that Tzivoy of Piri Arivya. So if it was simply that she was in this predicament and couldn't get married, we wouldn't necessarily compel the master or the mistress to release her. The reason they did compel her here is because it led to this untoward behavior. It was causing problems of Isura. And that's why they compelled the owner to release her in this instance, because of that minhag hefker naguba, and she was stuck in this limbo zone where she couldn't get married, and that's what was causing the problem. But of our case, where halcha efsha demiyachid la'avdei umintar la, over here where she's a full-fledged shifcha kina'anit, in the case where Abaye was making a statement, over there the owner can give her to marry an Eved Ivri, and somebody could take care of her. So the fact that she is minhag hefker or isura is associated with the shifcha knanit, that in of itself is not a reason to release the woman. Just have her get married to an Eved Ivri, have her have someone who takes care of her, watches over her, and prevents her from acting in this way. So there is a solution to the problem in the case where she's a full-fledged shifcha knanit. That solution doesn't exist when she's half and half, and that's why we compel the release in that case. That's why Abaye differentiates between the case where she's half shifcha knanit, half bat chorim, versus the case where she's a full-fledged shifcha knanit. Now, gufa, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kol ha-meshachrer avdo over ba'asei, anybody who releases their eved knani is in violation of an asei, which means that it's an isur asei, shenemar lo'olam bahem tavodu, that you must enslave them, that you should always enslave them. From there we learn out that an Eved Knani, in its essence, becomes the property of its owner, and remains the property owner. It can be passed down from generation to generation. They become like property of the individual that owns them. But that also, that asay is, lo'olam behem tavodu, you should always enslave them. If you free them, then you're not always enslaving them, and that's the Isur Asay. That is the Isur that is derived from the positive commandment that you must enslave them. Ma'aseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, nechtas b'beit ha-knesset, there's an incident where Rabbi Eliezer went to shul, below matzah asara, they didn't have a minion, but he had a slave with him, his Eved Kenani was with him. So what did he do? V'shechrer avdo v'shlimo la'asara. He released, he freed his slave, in order to make up the tenth, to be the tenth man. How could he do that? In doing that, he is violating an asay to keep him in captivity and to enslave him. How is he releasing him in order to make the minyan? It's a mitzvah, abab avera. Gemara says, mitzvah shiny. That a mitzvah is different. So, just to note that the Gemara here, we have the girsa of mitzvah shiny. If you look at the Tosafot on the bottom of the previous Amud, the last line in that Tosafot says, Mishum mitzvah de rabbim shiny. That a mitzvah of rabbim is shiny. Obviously that has nafkaminot, which girsa you have. Is it enough simply that there's a mitzvah, and that's why you can release or overcome the problem of the isur asay of releasing the eved? Or do you need mitzvah de rabbim? Which means not only is it a mitzvah, but you need a mitzvah that benefits the public at large. And obviously that's a higher threshold in order to determine whether that is the case. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that the requirement of lo'olam bahem tavodu is subject to the larger picture, which is that just to free them for no reason at all, that you are restricted from doing because of lo'olam bahem tavodu. If there's a purpose in the release, then we believe that you can release them for that purpose, as long as that purpose is like a mitzvah or a mitzvah derabim, which then justifies the release of the individual, or basically overcomes the issue of this isur asay to release them. So you look at it as a bigger picture rather than the particular release of this eved, and in the bigger picture there's a benefit to the release over here, or there's something positive that's coming of it. That's why we allowed the release. That's what Ravina said to Abaye on the previous Amud, that even Rabbi Yehuda would agree in this case that you should release the woman because she's causing problems by being a Shifa Knanit. While she's enslaved, she's engaging in this freewheeling behavior and this promiscuous behavior and causing problems. So even Rabbi Yehuda would agree in that case that you can release her because there's a greater benefit to the release. And that is just demonstrated over here by the story of Rabbi Eliezer. When there's a mitzvah, when there is a benefit, then we say you can release her. Now you could argue, and Abaye could say, that's in the case where there is a positive mitzvah being accomplished, then we say that the release is okay. In that case, you're preventing an isur, maybe that's not a good enough reason in order to release the slave, and you can see how they would make such distinctions or differentiations over here. Now with regards to this mitzvah, we have to note that this is only a mitzvah derabbanon of davening with a minyan. So, in other places, some of the Rishonim note that maybe this was a case where it was a minyan d'oraita, like Kriyat HaTorah for Parshat Amalek, and therefore it was involved with a mitzvah d'oraita, and that's why he was allowed to free a slave, which is an Isur d'oraita, for a mitzvah d'rabbanon. Others suggest over here that it's a special type of mitzvah d'rabbanon, and that might relate to what we said before, that mitzvah d'rabim shiny. That even though it's a mitzvah derabbanon, it's a mitzvah derabim, and therefore it takes on an additional strength in its ability to overcome the problem of the isur aseh associated with the freeing of a slave. So just know that Tal Tosafot, in discussing the release of an eved, says that if someone on their deathbed says that I want such and such a maidservant and such a slave to go free, then it's incumbent upon the yorshim, those that inherit, to release the slave. The question is, why? Why are they compelled? They're going to have to violate an isur in order to be mekayim divrei hamet. Why is that allowed? So Tosfot says over there, katam kevin deino yoshim rishayim lishtaved ba b'shul mitzvah lekayim divrei hamet. Because the yoshim are caught in a bind now. They cannot enslave the individual anymore because they have a mitzvah to lekayim divrei hamet in order to carry out the words of the person who was passing away, which we know there's a mitzvah to try to accomplish or do whatever the mate had asked for. So here they asked to free them. So they can't enslave them because of that. They're no longer subject to the requirement of enslavement because they can't enslave them. So then you can't say to them, and therefore there's no longer an isur that is involved over here. The fact that they have to write a get shichur, Tosfot says, as long as there is a mitzvah rabba of l'shevet yitzara, then we would require that they give a get shichrur in order to accomplish the complete freedom of this eved. Anyway, it's an interesting Tosafot that discusses why you're allowed, your shim are allowed to free the slave, even though technically they'd be in violation of an assay. But as Tosafot suggests here, that the mitzvah of Kayim Divrei Amet already puts this slave in this limbo state where they're no longer really enslaved to the Yorshim. And so because of that, they are not obligated then to carry out or to maintain the Olem Bahem Tavodu, and their freeing of the slave is not problematic. And again, giving them a get shichrur is to release the slave, the Eved Kenani, in order to perform Piriyah Rivya or L'Shevet Yitzara. That mitzvah overrides the restriction against them giving a get shichrur to such an Eved Kenani. Tanu Rabbanan, the Olem Bahem Tavodu, Rishut Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Olem Bahem Tavodu, Rabbi Yishmael says you have the right to enslave them, doesn't mean you have the obligation to enslave them. Rabbi Akiva Omer, chova. Rabbi Akiva says it is an obligation to enslave them. Rashi goes through the scenario here that Rabbi Yishmael is speaking about, but it's basically to give you permission to maintain an Eved Kenani. Remember that there's a requirement of Lo Techaye Kol Neshama for the Shiva Amim, that when you come into Eretz Yisrael, you have to wipe out entirely the seven nations that live there. You're not allowed to leave anybody living. Eved Kenani would imply that you have someone from the Kenanite nations that's still alive and you make them to an Eved Kenani. How do you have permission to do that? That's the Olam Bahem Tavodu, is the Rishut to enslave them. And Rashi says the scenario here is a case where somebody from another nation came and took a Kenanite wife. The child that is born to that couple can be enslaved as an Eved Kenani, is not subject to Lo Techaye Kol Neshama. And that's what it means, Rishut. Olam Bahem Tavodu gives you permission to enslave those individuals and not kill them out when they are a product of a Knanit woman and a man from another nation. And that's what Rishut means according to Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Akiva says, like we've been saying until now, Chuva means that if they are enslaved, you have an obligation to enslave them and you do not have the right to release them anymore. Now, if you remember, this is from the Gemara in Sota. And in the Gemara in Sota, they actually have three machlokot with regards to this. One of them is Olem Bahem Tavodu. Rabbi Shmuel says Rishut. Rabbi Akiva Omer Chuva. then v'kinei et ishto, that a person should warn his wife in situations where she's possibly secluding with an individual. There Rabbi Shmuel says reshut, Rabbi Kiva says chova, an obligation. And then the third case over there is la'itama, which is the requirement of a kohen to be mitameh for his relatives. And there, again, Rabbi Shmuel says reshut, Rabbi Kiva says chova. V'dilma, the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar savalakim andamar reshut. Who says that Rabbi Elazar over here, when he freed his slave in order to make the minyan, that he holds like Rabbi Akiva? And therefore he was in violation of the Isra of Lo'olam Bahem Tavodu. And here we say, Mitzvah Shaini. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe he holds like Rabbi Shmuel. And since he holds like Rabbi Shmuel, it's only permissible to enslave them. You're not obligated to enslave them, and therefore you could free them without violating any Isur. It says, Lo Sakadatcha, Tatanya Behedja, Rabbi Elazar Omer Chuba. Because we have an explicit braita that says Rabbi Elazar believes, like Rabbi Akiva, that it's an obligation to enslave the Eved Kanani. And therefore the reason, or the only reason, that he would have freed the slave here is because of mitzvah, or mitzvah derabim, shiny. Okay, Amar Rova, Bahani Tlat Mile, Nachte Balibatim Minichsehon. There are three things that cause people to lose their wealth or their possessions. One is the Mafki of Daihu, the Cheruta. They free their slaves, which is a violation of an Isur Asei De Oraito, and that causes them to lose their possessions. Udisayre Nichsayu B'Shabto. They worry about their business dealings on Shabbat. Over here, it literally means that they tour their possessions or their business, their plants or their plantations on Shabbat itself. They eat on Shabbat, they eat their meal while the Rav is giving his drusha. So instead of going to the drusha, they go to the Kiddush, or they go home to eat instead of hearing the Rav's drusha. So we're not even talking about the Kiddush club, which involves many, many more Yisurim, because all the things that you're missing during the time that you're at the Kiddush club and what type of example that sets for the children and the other people in the shul. So leaving that aside, this is a time where already davening's over, and the Rav's giving the drusha, and they do something. Instead of hearing the Rav's drusha, they do a kiddush, or they're doing eating instead. So these three things cause individuals to lose their possessions, and you can see why, that it's a midah keneged midah. All of these yisurim, or violations, involve the possessions of the individual. It's a midah keneged midah that they lose their possessions. Da'amar Rabbi Chir Ba'av Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shtei Mishpachot Ayu B'Yerushalayim. There were these two families in Yerushalayim, Achat Kava Sudata B'Shabto. One of them made their suda on Shabbat, v'chad kava suda to bear Shabbat. One of them made it on Friday, seemingly, ushtehem ne'akru. And both of these families got wiped out or got ruined by this. Now, as Rashi explains over here, obviously the one who had the meal on Shabbat is referencing to what we just said before. They had their meal on Shabbat during the time of the drasha, and that was the problem. The one who had it on Erev Shabbat, it's not clear here what the problem is. Rashi gives two possibilities as to what the issue is. One possibility is that they ate their bigger meal on Friday night and not on Shabbat day. The Gemara in Psachim, in discussing the issue of Kiddush, says Kiddush Alayla and Kiddush Hayom, Kiddush Alayla Kodim. Meaning that Kiddush at night is more important than the Kiddush Hayom. The other hand, Kavod Alayla, the Kavod Hayom, Kavod Hayom Odif. That when it comes to giving Kavod to Shabbat or having the meal on Friday night versus the meal on Shabbat, Kavod Hayom Odif, that the meal during the day is more important. So what these individuals were doing, where they were making their bigger Shabbat meal on Friday night rather than on Shabbat, and that was the problem. So they were having a meal on Shabbat, but it was Friday night, and they were investing all of their efforts and their great meal to the Friday night meal instead of the Shabbat meal, which is not what you're supposed to do. It's supposed to be Kvod Hayom Adif. The other possibility, Rashi says, if we take it literally, that they were a very wealthy family, and every day of the week they used to eat also what seems to be a late lunch on every day of the week, because they were wealthy. They had a late lunch, and then they had dinner. But they also did it on Erev Shabbat, which was inappropriate. We know that from the Mishnah in the 10th Perek of Psachim, that one is not allowed to have a large meal at Mincha time on Erev Shabbat, or any Erev Yom Tov, because that will ruin the appetite of the individual going into Shabbat. And this family, even though they did it every day and they had the means to do it, they should have abstained on Friday, because that would have wet their appetite to have a much bigger Shabbat meal, and instead they were eating this big meal on Erev Shabbat, which was in a sense a diyah, a denigration of the Kavod HaShabbat. So for that reason, both of these families were lost out. Nekru is unclear here whether that means that they were wiped out, or they were wiped out in the sense of their possessions. They lost their possessions here, but seemingly correlated what Rabba said over here, that these three things caused the Balibatim to lose their possessions. Amar Rab, Amar Rav, a Magdish Abdo Yatzel Lechirut. Someone who is consecrating their Eved to Hekdesh, he goes free. My time. What is the reason here? Gufei lo Kaddish. He can't be Makdish inherently, the Eved. He can't go on the Mizbeach. Can't go to Berak HaBayit. He's not something that can be inherently Kadosh. Ladami lo Kamar. He certainly is not saying for his monetary value. Delave Am Kadosh Kamar. He's saying, or what the meaning of his words are, that he should be like the Am Kadosh, like the holy nation. The holy nation means that he should be a free man, like a regular free Jew. And that's what he's meant over here. Why that is, Rashi over here discusses what's happening. Why can't we say that he did it, Lidmei? Why is he doing it for his value? That would make the most sense over here. And we have examples of that. For instance, if a person's Makdish and Behemat Meyah, person takes a non-kosher animal's Makdish to the Mikdash, it's clear there that that animal can't gain inherent Kedusha. So when you're Makdish Behemat Meyah, you're Makdish for its value. Why don't you say the same thing over here? So Rashi says that's because by Behemat Meyah, there's no other way to interpret what you're saying. You can't be Makdish inherently. You can't say Am Kadosh because Behemat Meyah is not an Am Kadosh. So the only alternative with your words is to say that you are consecrating it for its monetary value. On the other hand, here, where there is another alternative, what Rashi says is that when you use the term Makdish, instead of Domi or Erech Halai, instead of saying something that indicates you want to consecrate the value of the object, you say that you're Makdishit, that's the wrong language to use over here, and therefore we're going to interpret that language to mean that Am Kadosh, that you want to free the slave. That's the way that Rashi describes it. You can see here, there's a very large Tosafot over here that discusses this issue that Rashi is raising over here, or the description that Rashi makes over here. And he asks numerous questions on that, and therefore he says, V'nira lefaresh gufo lo kadish perish le'asor behana'a. He says that when you want to say gufo lo kadish over here, doesn't mean, like Rashi said there, you can't make it inherently kadosh, but rather you can't make this asor behana'a. Kamo behemat me'ah shemo alimba. Comes the behemat me'ah. If you're makdishit, then you can have associated with that an isur hana'ah to benefit from it until the monetary value is given to hekdesh. V'chein pakarka. The dami lo kamar shei gufo kadosh limacher. And when it says that it's not for its monetary value, means in order to be sold. So Rashi believes here that inherently you can't be makdish the goof of the slave, and even if you try to do it, it doesn't work. And it's similar to being Makdish Behemat Mima to Hekdesh for its Damim, which doesn't work, and the animal becomes inherently Kadosh, and then has Kedushat HaGuf. So those two over here, you don't have the ability to create Kedushat HaGuf with this Eved, and therefore when you say it, it automatically means Am Kadosh, even if you wanted it to be for its monetary value, but the way that you're saying it determines or gains him his freedom, rather than being Makdishit. Tosfot, on the other hand, says that the kinyan of guf here is the fact that there can't be any mi'ilah in the Eved, and that's why there's no kinyan of guf over here, and since he didn't explicitly say that it's a kinyan damim, that's why we interpret it to mean Am Kadosh, that he is free. The Ramban says that you don't have ability to be Makdish the Eved for a kinyan of guf, because the kinyan of guf in the Eved is the Isurim that are associated with the Eved. And those Isurim, you don't have a right to be Makdish, or you don't have a right to control. The only thing you can do is sell those rights to another party, but you can't be Makdish those rights, which are just Isurim. And therefore, there's no Hakdashat HaGuf of the Eved. The only thing you can do is be Makdishim for the Damim. And over here, since you use the Lashon of Makdish, we assume that it means that you wanted to set him free. Gemara says, Rav Yosef Amarav, Amafkir Abdo Yatsa Lecherut. So we have a memra from Yosef Amarav who says that a person who releases his Eved, it goes free. So now, you have two statements here. One statement in the name of Rav that says, if you're Makdish, your Eved, it goes free. One statement in the name of Rav says, if you're Mafkir, your Eved, he goes free. Mandamar Makdish, Koshakein Mafkir. The one who says that if you're Makdish, the Eved, he goes free, then certainly if you're Mafkir, him, he would go free. Because there, where you're reinterpreting his words by Makdish to say he really meant, and clearly when he says mafkir, and he clearly disowns the Eved, it should go free. Mandamar mafkir of a makdish lo. One who says mafkir, by makdish he says no. Dilmo ledomi kamar. Maybe he was saying for its monetary value, which is along the lines of what you were suggesting, that it's not so clear here that you can't consecrate the Eved for his monetary value, whether that's his actual value in the slave market, or whether that is his output. Either one of those should be able to be garnered towards the purposes or benefits of Hekdesh. Sibailu, Tariq get Shikrur Olo Tariq. Does he need to get a document of emancipation if he's freed in this manner? Tashma, the Rav Chir Ba'avin Amarav, Echad Zev, Echad Zev, Yetzel Echeirut, but Tariq get Shikrur. In both of these instances, the Eved goes free, but he still needs a document of emancipation to acquire his rights to himself. So this is against what Shmuel said before, that if you're Mafkir the Eved, it's simply over and he's free. Over here, Rav says, yes, he's free, but he requires a get shechur, and you can see this is a machloket Rav and Shmuel with regards to this. So the Tosafot read explains why it is that when you're Mafkir the Eved, that you have to give him a get shechur, and that is because when you're Mafkir the Eved, you are taking away your monetary ownership inside of the Eved. And of course, the Eved, who is the closest party to this Hefker, takes possession of himself when he is Hefker. So the monetary ownership he takes. On the other hand, aval kinyan ha'isur enu davar amatil alei shem hefker. When it comes to the kinyan asur, the kinyan aguf, this is what we spoke about at the beginning of today's daf, that is not automatically released when you're mafkir him. And that requires the get shichrur to take away the kinyan isur. So the kinyan damim is released by the hefker, and the kinyan isur is released through the get shichrur. And that's why there's a requirement for get shichrur along with the hefker in order to free this slave. Amar Rabbo, Omotvinan Ashmaitin. We ask on our memorot that we brought over here, which is the nature of the questions that you were asking. Hamakdish Nichasav, person who is Makdish all of his possessions, Vayubahen Avadim. And amongst his possessions are these Avadim Iknanim. Ena Gizbarim Ratsiaim Lotziam Lecherut. The Gizbarim have no right to free them. Aval Mukhrin Otam Lecherim. They can sell them to other parties. Vacherim Lotziam Lote Lecherut. And those people that purchase them can then free them. Rabbi Omer, Omer Ani, Rabbi says that I say, Avhu notain deme atzmo, v'yotze, mipnei shukum mocher lo. That he can buy his own freedom, because selling the Eved Kanani to a third party is no different than selling the Eved Kanani to himself. If he comes up with the money, he can redeem himself and buy himself away from Hekdesh. The treasurers of Hekdesh can't free the slave, because they don't have ownership in the slave of the goof of the slave. They simply have the right to monetize the slave for his monetary value. And so therefore they can't free him. But once they sell him to a third party, or of course if they sell him to himself according to Rabbi, then he can go free. But when you sell him to a third party, as Rashi says over here, they don't have to free him. If they want to free him, they can free him. Otherwise, they can acquire the slave and then take possession of the slave and keep him as a slave. Matnitan karamit alei derav. You're asking from a Mishnah on Rav? Rav Tano Hu Polik. Rav has the status of a Tano, and you're trying to question Rav from a Tanaic work. A Tanaic work is not a problem for Rav, because Rav has that status of being a Tano. This is something that we see all over Shas. Sometimes the Gemara invokes the principle, sometimes it's not. It's not clear when or when they do not invoke the principle. But because Rav sits on the edge of the Tanaim and Amoraim, he's a Talmud of Rabbi Chiya, his uncle's Rabbi Chiya is a Tano, Rabbi is his Rebbe, and so Rav sits at that transition generation between the Tanaim and Amoraim. So sometimes he's given the status of a Tana, sometimes he's given the status of an Amora, and again, the Gemara invokes the principle in different places. It's not clear when they use one or the other. It might be just when they're stuck in a bind that they use Rav Tana Upolig, but it is invoked in this situation. So here the Gemara admits that this Tanaic work is not like Nerav, which says that if you're Makdish the Eved, that it does go to Hekdesh, and then Hekdesh sells the Eved for his monetary value, which is the dummy kamar, that is for its monetary value that it is sold. Alright, so now Tashma, Ach Kol Cherem. So the Pasuk says in the end of Parshat Bechukotai with regards to being Makdish different items, it says, Ach Kol Cherem Asher Yacharam LaHashem, that any item that you dedicate to Hashem, and then it lists their number of items that you can dedicate to Hashem. One of them is Me'adam. Me'adam ad Be'ema. A person can be dedicated to Hashem. Elu Avadav v'shifchotav ha'knani. These are his Eved Knani, his slaves and maidservants that are Knanim that he owns, that he's able to dedicate them to Hashem. So Hacha b'mayaskinan. What is the situation here? What is going on in this drasha or this midrash halacha? So if damar the dummy, if he says that for their monetary value, iochi idachnami damar le dummy. If that's the case, why don't we say that the other case also was a case where he said the dummy? So the Gemara says, Iyochi, ein gizbarim retziam lo tziam lechirut, gizbarim ma'avitayu. Then what are the treasures of Hekdesh having to do with this? The Gemara says, in order for this not to be a problem for Rav, we're going to explain that the case here in this Midrash Halacha is a case where he dedicated the Eved for its monetary value. And in dedicating the Eved for its monetary value, then we know what he's doing, and that's why the Eved is sold for his monetary value, or he gets the equivalent value and he gives it to Hekdesh. So why don't we answer on behalf of Rav the same thing in the previous Tanaic work that we brought, that HaMakdish Nechasav, and there were Avadim amongst them. There we say, oh, it's a problem for Rav, it's a stira against Rav, and Rav will argue on that. But why don't we just answer the same way and say that's a case where he said for their monetary value. The answer the Gemara gives is that's not a good answer in that case. In that case it says the treasurers of Hekdesh intervene and sell the Eved Kanani. What do the treasurers have to do with the Eved Kanani? If an individual is makdish, anything lidami, for its monetary value, then it's up to that individual then to pay the monetary value. And if a person says that I want to give my value to Hekdesh, then the Gizbarim don't come and take him away and sell him. They demand that the person make the payment. He owes money up to his value. Same thing true with an Eved. If he says the value of the Eved I'm dedicating to Hekdesh, then Hekdesh has no right to go and sell the Eved. Hekdesh simply demands he pay the money. And so that's the question here. What do the Gizbarim have to do with this at all? The fact that the Gizbarim is selling the slaves shows you that that was not what he said. He did not say the dummy kamar, because if that was the case, the Gizbarim wouldn't be involved. He'd be involved in determining how to raise the money and pay Hekdesh that money. The fact that the Gizbarim are doing it shows you that that's not the case. Now Rashi says over here, even though, again, that an Eved is considered to be property, and therefore you could argue over here that when he's makdish, the item, he's being makdish at limkor, to sell it, just like you would do by behema tmeya, or just like you would do like by karka, why don't you just say the same thing here by the slave? Rashi says that that's not the case here because there's another interpretation to the word kadosh here, which is kadosh. And since you have that alternative explanation, we opt for that alternative explanation that he's freed rather than to say that he is mukdash to be sold for that benefit. And that's why we can't explain this Tanaic work as being a case where he's makdish the Eved for his monetary value, and therefore they are realizing that monetary value through selling the slave, just like you would do it by karka or behemat meya, because of this alternate explanation, which we see is the more likely explanation for being makdish the Eved, rather than simply being makdish him for his monetary value or to be sold. But two, aval mochrim otam le'acherim, ve'acherim motzim otam le'cherut. In addition, that Tanaic work says that you're allowed to sell them to third parties, and those third parties free them. Acherim ma'avitayu. What if third parties have to do with this at all? Again, he just dedicated the slave for his monetary value. All he has to do is give that monetary value to Hekdesh. Has nothing to do with other parties. Has nothing to do with a treasurer. Betu, Rabbi Omer, Omerani, afu notein to be'atzmo, we would say, b'pneishu k'mochrolo, because he can buy his own freedom, because it's as if he's selling the Eved to himself. V'ladami, my b'pneishu k'mochrolo, that if he just dedicated the Eved for his monetary value to Hekdesh, why is the Eved purchasing himself or getting his freedom over here? He has nothing to do with this. All of these reasons make it, I mean, it's obvious after the first one, but the Gemara compounds the question and says you can't say that that Braita is talking about the dummy kamar, and that's why we left that as being a stira for a Rav in that case, because we couldn't explain it. But here by the Midrash Halacha, we can explain it in a way where it's not a stira for Rav. Tashma, ha-magdish abdo, osev ochel, shelo hikdish el adamav. So a person that is makdish is Eved. He oseh, he does, ve'ochel, and he eats. He was only makdish it for its monetary value. So the Gemara says, oseh Eved, ve'ochel, ein maseh adav hekdesh. That whatever he makes, whatever he does not go to Hekdesh, but rather belongs to his original owners. And there you see from here that a person is makdish in Eved, is makdish it for his monetary value. Gemara says, hamani, Rabbi Meir, he... The author of that position is Rabbi Meir. Damar, ein adam mutzi dvarav bebatala. Person does not speak in vain. When a person, especially with regards to Hekdesh, if a person makes a statement in Hekdesh, we're going to try our best to interpret the words that he says to the benefit of Hekdesh, and that there is some benefit here to Hekdesh. And that's why over here, he is considered to be kadosh. Achanami mistavro. To explain it according to Rabbi Meir makes a lot of sense. Diktoni seifa. Because the latter half of that brayta says, Vechein hu shikdish atzmo. In a case where he's makdish himself, oseh ve'ochel, he can do and eat, I mean that he is free of his output going to hekdesh, shelo yikdish elo damav, because he's only makdish for his monetary value. Iyamar kishlomar Rabbi Meir here, Shapir. If you say that the author of that brayta is Rabbi Meir, that makes sense. Iyamar trabonon hi, if you say it's rabonon, bishlomo abdol d'meikoi. Then with the Rabbanon who say that people do make statements that are not always completely understandable or completely true. And therefore, in the case by an Eved, you could explain it according to the Rabbanon because an Eved is property. It is for his monetary value. Therefore, if you're Makdishim, in all likelihood that you wanted to be Makdishim for his monetary value. And that's what it meant. Bishlam ala Evdo Dami Koi. Elihiu the Dami Koi? Wait a minute. Does a regular individual, he's not open for his monetary value. He's not someone who's traded like property. A regular individual, if you say specifically that you're going to give their value to Hekdesh, that's one thing. But on the other hand, if you just stop say a Makdish, this individual to Hekdesh, that has no meaning because the person is not property or does not have a natural value that is associated with that. Therefore, according to the Chachamim, that individual does nothing. He said nothing. His statement was meaningless. For Rabbi Meir, who tries to find a way to interpret the statement to make it meaningful, he'll say over here that you were makdish your monetary value to Hekdesh, and you have to pay your monetary value to Hekdesh. So that would make sense if Rabbi Meir was the author of that braita, because in that case we can explain the two parts of the braita. If the Rabbanon are the authors of that braita, then we can explain the first part, but we can't explain the second part. And again, therefore it's not a problem for Rav's statement, because over here, this is Shita to Rabbi Meir. But the Chachamim would disagree in this case and say that if you're Makdish the Eved, freeing him and not necessarily doing it for his monetary value. Okay, we're going to stop here, six lines down on the top of Lamed Tet Amud Aleph.